Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. We've got some good stuff lined up for you straight ahead with our good buddy Stephen Baum. Stephen is an advisor and a coach to CEOs, and after having spent many years as a consultant, he is now an independent practitioner, and he's the author of What Made Jack Welch Jack Welch, and he is our good friend. Stephen Baum, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you back. And that other organization, that little organization you're part of,
Vistage.
Yeah. You know what? I still have to think about it because I remember them as their own the other name.
It used to be called Tech.
Tech, and I still have to get that. I have to go through that process. Do you ever do that with anything?
Well, 47 years under the name Tech and 3 years under the name Vistage, a lot of people are going to remember Tech.
I know it's different, and I know it's Vistage, but I just have to go back and come back. It's sort of like when you're spelling something and you say, okay, A, B, C, D, E, F. You have to go all the way back to A to get to K, right?
My daughter-in-law said it took her 6 months to get used to being called Mrs. Baum after she married my son.
Exactly. Well, you can imagine somebody being named Blasingame, in the middle of their life. That's pretty rough too. Hey, Stephen. One of the things that I've been talking to my audience about for several months now, since fourth quarter 2008. I told them, and I think I've mentioned this to you before. I told them that, in my opinion, their 2009 goal should be to survive and open their doors on January 1, 2010. That should be their simple default prime directive goal for 2009. And then because in those days we didn't know how bad things were going to get. We didn't know where things were going. There was a lot of uncertainty. And so then, as the year unfolded, I started saying, okay, you still have to do the first thing, but now I want you to start thinking about, I want you to operate for survival, but I want you to start thinking about planning for success. So I was telling them, here's the real world that you're living in, and now I want you to start thinking about, how do you feel about what's going on? What are you seeing coming at you? And start taking steps to take advantage of the recovery. And you've been doing something very similar to that with the men and women in your Vistage groups, haven't you?
That's right. In fact, we started in the summer of 2007 when some of our businesses that are leading indicators began to see a storm coming. And our mantra in 2007 and 2008 was survival is victory.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which is sort of where you are.
That's exactly right.
And the folks in the group went through their lists of easy to do, hard to do, and finally things I'll never do. And they're in a new place now because they have reduced the actual capacity of their organizations to meet volume. And what that does is it lowers fixed costs sufficiently that any new volume has huge leverage for the earnings, for the income.
Oh, yeah.
So they are shifting now to ways to increase volume and make sure they don't lose the volume they have.
So they've been operating for survival. Now they're planning for success.
That's right. Now but as you said, and it's very important, they're not taking their eye off the ball.
No.
Of that you still need to survive in this environment. But the list of things that they're now focused on, having reduced their headcount, having moved offshore some of the work, having renegotiated with suppliers, all sorts of things like that. They're now looking at a more aggressive pursuit of market share. They're getting down to which competitor are we going to go after and which customer.
Right.
They're upgrading and expanding the sales force. They've actually hired some new salespeople.
Maybe even some acquisition opportunities.
Well, in fact, a couple of them have made small acquisitions for very little cash.
Mm-hmm.
where they basically had the support infrastructure to take a business and do something with it. One of the bigger companies in it has also made a couple of acquisitions in the area of green energy, mm-hmm. and environmental things. So there are selective investments being made in acquisitions. And they're even investing some in technology that supports the core services and some very specific targeted hiring, because there's an incredible number of very talented people out in the marketplace, yep. now at reasonable cost.
And with a new attitude, Stephen.
And you can say that again.
And I'm going to, when we come back, we're going to take a break in a second. And Stephen, when we come back, I want to tell you about some research that I've learned about in the last 30 days, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it.
Let's hear it.
I'm telling you, folks, there's a new attitude out there, and I've told you about it on the show. I've written about it in my blog, and as you can find there at smallbusinessadvocate.com. It's new stuff that's brand new stuff that we'll talk about. We'll come back after these messages, 20 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. I'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for staying with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for using it. Thanks for taking advantage of all the things that we have there, the articles, the archives, the Brain Trust members, hundreds and thousands of all those. And my blog is there. My knowledge base, AskJim.biz, is there. And my newsletter is there. I hope you'll check that out, because we'll send that to you by email every Sunday afternoon. By email, get you ready for the week ahead. And so check all those things out, and you can subscribe to many of those things on the website. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Stephen Baum is our guest. He's the author of What Made Jack Welch Jack Welch. He's a Vistage leader in the New Jersey tri-state area, New Jersey, New York area. And our good friend, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, Stephen, went to the break. You were talking about all the people out there that are looking for jobs, and I said they were highly motivated, and I make that comment not just intuitively, although I believe that would be accurate, that they're motivated for all the reasons that we think they're motivated for. But recent research by my friend Chuck Martin with NFI Research showed that 71% of the people he polled would rather work for a small and middle-sized company. This is really good news for small business owners who are ready to take the next step into this recovery with a new crew. What do you think?
Well, you know, Jim, we're seeing case examples of that already. About half of the CEOs in my Vistage New York City Metro group are effectively small businesses. The other half are very big businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And in the small businesses, what they're seeing now...
How big is your biggest one?
Employees? Biggest one is actually $4 billion.
Okay, how many employees? Approximate.
I would say that one has about 400 employees.
Okay.
It's amazing.
You know, according to the SBA, they're still a small business.
Well, some of the businesses are... I'll give you another example. There's one that's about $60 million in sales and has about 300 employees at
right.
this time.
Right.
And there's some that are 25 and 30 million that have employees under 100.
Yeah. Well, see, those are still small businesses. And those are the people who qualify who I think those 71% we're talking about.
Well, let me give you a couple of case examples. One of them is a mid-size accounting and private wealth advisory firm. In other words, it's not in the top tier of name firms.
Right.
But it's got a great reputation. They have been hiring from the large firms, really senior people as laterals without great expense.
Wow.
I mean, senior guys who bring a huge book of
right.
business with them.
Right.
And the reason they're coming to the smaller firm is because the smaller firm has its act together. The people who run the smaller firm convey this notion that they really know where they're going and they're solid. And you're not as at risk as just a number, just a payroll number at the large firm.
And let me tell you, there's another thing, Stephen, and you know this too. It's more fun to work for a smaller company.
It certainly is.
If every
for most of the people, you're a cog in a wheel at a large company.
Yeah. People work for compensation,
but they live to have fulfillment.
Well, in this environment, they want the fulfillment. They also want the security. And I'll give you another example. We have one a company in the group that's in the employee background screening business, high-tech checking on people's backgrounds and is their resume real and have they ever been convicted of anything, all that sort of stuff. And it's by any definition, a small business.
Mm-hmm.
They have recently hired a senior IT person from a major firm and two other major hires like that. And the reason, again, is because they're a big deal in a small pond, big mm-hmm. fish in a small pond,
mm-hmm.
but they also have a security that they don't in the larger firm that is just as likely to lay them off as not.
Well, see, here's the thing. We learned in the 80s that job security is a myth. We've learned also since then that working for a big company is more secure than working for a small company is also a myth.
Well, what the guys in my group will say, if you strive to be a top 10% performer, that's job security.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to be in the bottom 10
or 20%. Well, that's right. That's right. Your assignment isn't job security. Your performance is job security.
That's correct.
Now, talk to us about what you think your guys are. You've told us what your guys have been doing to make sure they survive. But what are they feeling about? What's their attitude about the future?
That's a very good question, because the boss, whatever the boss is feeling, gets transmitted.
Right.
As good an actor as most of the owners and CEOs are, whatever they're feeling comes through and people can sense it.
Osmosis. That's that thing we learned in the fifth grade, right?
Exactly. And I like to say that one of the jobs of the owner is being the parent at work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having a whole lot of adult children. I mean, they're not toddlers. I have sons who are in their 30s.
Right.
And you don't treat them the way you did when they
were
14. But there's still a job of parenting at work. And what the employees and their managers are looking at is how the boss is showing up. And what's going on right now is there's a lot of anxiety out there, given the still high level of uncertainty in the economy, the miserliness of many customers, the intense competition, sometimes at unreasonable prices, unsustainable. There's a lot of anxiety out there.
Yep.
Adding to that as an example is some of your best contacts at your client organizations have been laid off.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden you're also disconnected.
And the ones you have are scared to death.
Right. So the owner, who is, and as you once said to me, the owners of these businesses are highly identified with the business.
Right.
The fortunes of the business are their fortunes.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's a survival instinct that comes into play, this fight or flight part of the brain.
Stephen, hold on to that thought. I got to take a quick break. We got to do a little flight to a commercial. We're going to be right back with our good friend Stephen Baum. Now you remember. Richie Valenzuela, ladies and gentlemen, also known as Richie Valens, the late, great Richie Valens. Bringing us back, I'm Jim Blassingame. The Small Business Advocate was visiting with our good friend Stephen Baum, the author of What Made Jack Welch? Jack Welch. It's an outstanding book. I recommend it to you. Stephen, tell us how we can find you, how we can find your book, please.
Well, my website is StephenHBaumLeadership.com. Stephen with a PH, middle initial H, BAUM, leadership.com. Thank you for asking.
Absolutely. And they can find more about your book there, too?
They'll find out about the book. They'll find out about a CEO masterclass that I host. And they'll see the ideas that we're talking about today posted on the blog.
Okay, good. And
there's also a whole archives of free tools for use in managing.
Okay. Lots of good stuff there, folks. And Stephen's the best, as you can already tell. Stephen, I had to interrupt you. We went to a break. Can you pick up where you were?
Well, where I am is that I'm asking each of the guys who own and run a business to do a gut check. And the reason is that the uncertainty and the stress and what's going on has gone on for so long that there's a lot of anxiety. The anxiety leads to fear.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to a survival instinct of fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you're in that mental condition is it puts your own ego in the way of the things you want. In this emotional state, you're quicker to see a comment as a criticism, even an insult.
Right.
you'll see an expression of some employees' concern as whining or even as defection.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't hold yourself to a higher standard of how you show up, if you can't say to yourself, oops, my ego's getting in the way, then you will blow a chance to learn something. You'll blow a chance to teach and preach and inspire
right.
confidence. For myself, I've been reading a book that is
Can I step for a second, Steve?
Sure.
You also should realize that the person who you might take exception to what they're saying, thinking, or looking like are having the same kind of challenges, emotional challenges, that you are. Cut them a little slack.
Exactly right. Cut them a little slack and see through what you're hearing.
Yeah.
To where's it coming from?
And what we did around here, you know, in my little operation was back in December. We had a gut check meeting, and I told my people. I said, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where we're going here. I think I do, but I can't promise anything. But I can tell you this. This is my seventh recession. I made it through all the other six, and I think I'm going to make it through this one. What do you think? And we all laid it out on the table and talked about what we were happy about and what we were frightened about.
That has a huge impact. It's a release and a relief.
Yeah. So now go ahead with what you were going to say.
Well, so what's happening if your ego gets in the way? I'll give you a sort of a tangible example. I've been reading a book that is quite a good book, but it's a very difficult read, so I'll give you sort of the précis. It's by Eckhart Tolle, and it's called The New Earth.
Yeah.
And when I'm out driving on the highway, which is when I'm in my more unguarded moment
mm-hmm.
as a human being, and I think that's true of all of us,
mm-hmm.
I find myself thinking things about other drivers that are not happy thoughts. and sometimes I'll actually say something to myself.
And to them maybe even.
Well, yes, maybe to them. I don't know. I don't often get to that stage. But I realize after reading this book and thinking about what's going on with my CEOs and business owners, is what's really happening is I'm letting my ego get in the way of my life, and I'm carrying these heavy negative energy thoughts
mm-hmm.
that are a waste of energy, and they're the wrong way to think about things. And what happens when your ego gets in the way is you're thinking I'm better than they are.
Right.
And that's not a good thing to be thinking.
Your ego is not always your friend. Your ego is good if it motivates you and encourages you and causes you to push your own envelope. But when it comes to interpersonal relationships, and boy howdy, do we have plenty of need for those positive relationships right now, your ego's probably going to get in your way.
Well, if you can put in your head that what you're really after is the health of the enterprise,
right.
because what's good for you is a derivative of that,
mm-hmm.
and take your ego out of an individual conversation. I'll give you an example sort of that plays into what most leaders have to do now. It used to be a time when sort of a military approach to telling people what to do was how management worked.
Right.
And that doesn't work so good anymore. You've got to be more of a coach and more of a cheerleader and more of an inspirer. And if you're sitting with somebody and you're trying to get them to understand something and do something that they're not quite on top of, and your ego's in the middle of that thing,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to listen right, and
right.
you're not going to figure out how to say something in a way that they will get and they will go do.
Right.
So there's a gut check required of what's my mood today? What's my mood right now? Am I letting my ego get in the way of this, or am I being what I need to be? And I know this is soft stuff, but it's incredibly important.
Stephen, thank you for the wisdom today. Thank you for the insight into how other people are behaving. Thank you for all that you do for small business, and we'll see you next time.
Well, thank you for having me, Jim.
Stephen Baum, ladies and gentlemen, What Made Jack Welch Jack Welch. That's his book. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.